Manhã tão bonita, manhã. Na vida uma nova canção, cantando só teus olhos, teu riso, tuas mãos. Pois há de haver um dia em que virás das cordas do meu violão, que só teu amor procurou. Vem uma voz falar dos beijos perdidos nos lábios teus. La la la.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Friday edition of the French Connection. Today's date is the 12th of January, 2007. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here with us to investigate another segment of this sick story that we've all been living through here, this history of world illness that we keep having to revisit so we can save ourselves from a terrible future. This Zionist criminal cabal that is taking over the world is working overtime as we speak to try and stop the truth from coming out. And we, on our side, are attempting to turn up the heat as well, and put light in dark corners to find out where these cockroaches really, really live and what they really do. You know, there's so many subjects that we can cover, but the facts are that Iran is looking like almost an imminent next step for these crooks. And when you're taking a look back at how they did Iraq, you're probably going to find many, if not all, of the same suspects involved in the next phase. So what we would like to do today is bring on both of our resident researchers, Christopher Bolin and Eric Huffschmidt. We're going to have a little bit of a roundtable today on several subjects. The first one I'm going to bring up with these gentlemen is what's been happening with Christopher for the first part here. He needs the support of our listeners, and I want to put this out right at the beginning of the broadcast, because he's got a family and we are a very small and unheavily financed group of truth tellers here. And trust me, ladies and gentlemen, we make do on very small sums. So I'm just trying to put it out there that you could give Christopher your support on the French Connection, and donations will be given directly to him, his wife and children, and take care of some of his legal problems and other things. So I want to get that out to start with. And but the subjects we've got today, he's written two new articles, Chris has, and we're gonna bring them up right now. Chris, are you with me?
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you quite well, Chris. Welcome to the French Connection. And Eric, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. Well, one of the first things that I want to go to is one of the articles you have out that we haven't discussed together. It is the Zionist occupation of Iraq, and it's pretty heavy duty with one subject that I'm familiar with already, with this man named Bremer. And in fact, Bremer, after billions were missing from the Provisional Authority, actually bought himself a wonderful house up in Geneva, as I understand, next door to George Bush Sr., which is interesting, right on the lake up there. And but the fact of the matter is during that time, Christopher, there was a lot of oil being pumped out of Iraq, and none of it has any receipts. So we don't know where all that oil money went to, do we?
Yeah, the real problem with the CPA excuse me, until the end of June 2004, there was no metering of the oil production of Iraq or the export. And you know, these big tankers were filling up in Basra, for example, but there was no metering. And the couple Iraqi fellows that were talking to the advising the Coalition Provisional Authority repeatedly asked for metering to be put onto the oil production to make sure that none was being stolen. But when they left after, you know, so many months, a year in office, there was no metering of the oil. And that is extremely suspicious. You know, that's Iraq's number one export, most valuable product. And for it to be treated in such a careless way certainly suggests that, you know, large amounts of oil were being stolen.
Well, considering, too, they did claim in advance of this that they were going to use the proceeds to offset the cost on the American public, didn't they?
Right, and that didn't happen very well either.
It was supposed to be a self-financed war. What does it cost us to date, do you know? It's going to be $1 trillion before the end of it, isn't it?
I think it's half a trillion. I think it's something like $2 billion a week. It's an extreme, you know, but they got all these mercenaries, got like 50,000 mercenaries running around Iraq. I've seen huge numbers. It's a big ripoff. It's a big ripoff. But what I wrote about recently was that it's often talked about that this is a war in Iraq. The only war in Iraq is the fact that we have this illegal occupation in Iraq. And the worst thing about it is that it's been created and advised and put into effect by a bunch of enemies of Iraq, namely Zionist agents.
Well, you know, I've looked at some of the usual suspects that you wrote about there, and they have a pedigree in the Zionist movement. And the one that Bremer's movement participation has been long lived in that situation. So has people from the UN, and so have other people from Bush's administration. You want to talk about a couple of the names you found?
Yeah, there was, you know, Simone Ledeen was a young 28-year-old girl. I think she had a Harvard MBA, and she's the daughter of Michael Ledeen, the person who is an outspoken neocon who calls for destabilizing Iraq time and time again. He calls America to fight these Iraqis and to attack Iran, that Iran is the central act. And then his daughter winds up going over there and being the senior advisor to the Ministry of Finance.
Weren't they with that same group of Wormser and all the rest of them and Wolfowitz and the whole bit?
Yes, Michael Ledeen, he's well known from the Iran-Contra time.
That's right.
And then there was Michael Fleischer. He's the brother of Ari Fleischer. He went over there in the very beginning of the CPA, and he became, I think it was in November 2003, he was the deputy director of privatization, private sector development, I think is what they call it. He's the brother of Ari Fleischer, he worked for a company called, a little company in New Jersey, and he was, supposedly he was a businessman, and yet the company he was working for, Bogan Communications International, was actually one of those Israeli shell companies, and his chairman, the chairman of the company, the people that he worked for, people who paid him, people who hired him, are two Israeli fighter pilots. But it doesn't end there. With all of these Israeli shell companies like Bogan Communications, you know, they get taken over by one Israeli company and then they move people around. And the company behind the whole thing is a company called RADA, R-A-D-A, which is in Israel. And it's basically run by the most senior officers, retired officers of the Israeli Air Force. Now, this is the person who Michael Fleischer, Ari Fleischer's brother, was working for when he took a leave of absence. He's returned to that company now in New Jersey. This is the company he was working for when he went over to Iraq and spent 8.5 months privatizing the 200 largest Iraqi factories and concerns.
And whose hands did they all end up in? I'm sure.
Well, that's the thing that's extremely hard to find out. You know, when they privatize assets in Kosovo or Bosnia or Afghanistan or Iraq, it's very hard. It's not transparent. And what's important to understand is that when Jerry Bremer came over there, he was very excited about privatizing the whole economy of Iraq. And the way that it worked, of course, is that when the Americans took over and decapitated the government of Iraq, then all of the assets of Iraq, of the Ba'ath Party, of Saddam Hussein, became the property of the Coalition Provisional Authority, Jerry Bremer. Then Jerry Bremer, of course, was in position then to distribute these spoils of war to his friends.
Yep.
But who's advising him? His senior advisor was Michael Fleischer.
Basically what you're saying is that the vultures descended, and the lead vulture for a time was this guy Bremer, who happens to be a next-door neighbor of George Bush Sr. over in, and at the same time he was in charge, mm-hmm. $3 billion went missing.
Yeah, these guys all come from Connecticut. They're from New Canaan, Connecticut, in that area. Pound Ridge, New York, for example. I think that's interesting. The Fleischers, Michael Fleischer and his brother Ari Fleischer, according to their biographies, grew up in Pound Ridge, New York, which is a very small, exclusive hamlet just across the border from New Canaan, Connecticut. And this is exactly the same place where the Yaron brothers, the two Israeli Yaron brothers who ran cybersecurity for the U.S. government, where they supposedly grew up. So it's a very small clique of people. But Paul Bremer went over there, and his goal was to privatize all of these assets of the Iraqi state. And the person who was in position to guide and supervise this was Michael Fleischer, who was working for an Israeli company owned by the former commander of the Israeli Air Force. Now, for the United States, for the U.S. government, to have sent people with those connections to the Israeli state who are being paid by Israeli nationals, this is clearly a person who is a paid agent of a foreign state. More than that, of course, Israel has been at war with Iraq since 1948. So it really exposes who was behind the occupation of Iraq. Now, the reason that's important is because Americans are scratching their heads now and wondering whether we should surge or not surge in Iraq. What is the wisdom of the president's plan to send 20,000 more troops to Baghdad, etc.? It's ludicrous. The only conflict in Iraq is because we are there and because the Israelis are running the occupation. You know, you can be sure that key strategic companies were turned over to shell companies either in Europe and the United States, which are controlled by the Israelis, just the same way that the Israelis and the Mossad control companies in this country.
CTIS is, what is it, the controlled...
ICTS,
international
security,
right, and it's Hutley International, and it's all goes back to Israel.
Yes, and then you have Dan Senior, Dan Samuel Senior. He's this 31-year-old. He was a 31-year-old guy when the war broke out in 2003, and he was the director of information at CENTCOM headquarters in Qatar. And the first time anybody saw him, they said, "Boy, this guy looks like an Israeli." He's wearing like a short crew cut. He had he looked very Israeli, acted very Israeli, and had an attitude like an Israeli. What's interesting is that his biographies that appear in the papers or on the White House website, for example, never mention his parents. And that's interesting because his parents are James Senior, who's passed away, and his mother is Helen Senior, who still lives in Ontario, in York, Ontario. His mother, while he was growing up, was the executive secretary for the Israeli consulate in Toronto. She served under seven Israeli consul generals in Toronto. And, that's important. That's no small area. This deals with the Bronfmans and the huge Zionist community of Canada.
Yeah.
And she spoke, she worked and lived in the Hebrew language, she said, 5 days a week. Everything that she thought and did revolved around Israel. This is the family where Dan Senior grew up. And furthermore, his father, who originally was from, I think, Utica, New York, although he was born in Cleveland, again, the Cleveland connection,
yep.
His father actually went to Israel, I think, in the late 60s, early 70s, and worked for the Jewish Agency, which is the umbrella organization for the World Zionist fundraising effort that goes on for the State of Israel. So Dan Senior was not only the person in charge of communicating what was happening in the war. After the war was accomplished, he was one of the first people into Baghdad, and he became the senior advisor for Jerry Bremer and the occupation authority.
Now, Eric, I want to bring Eric in on this. Eric, we've looked at these subjects so often here, and I can't even imagine that we don't get better traction on these facts. Do you have any questions for Christopher about what we've covered thus far?
Well, no, but you can understand why the traction, why you don't get traction by looking at the articles. He's the only one that is actually going after who is behind all this and what they're actually doing. The Zionist occupation of Iraq, I mean, that's just, they don't bring this up. You won't see this with Alex Jones, the Webster Tarpley, any of them.
That's right.
And it's, and a lot of Americans will say, well, it doesn't even apply to us anyway because it's just Iraq. It's just that little country over there in the desert. But
well, it's only the country. We've killed 650,000 of their civilians.
Yeah, but it's not just that. If you look at Serbia, you look at Europe, Germany, Japan, America, they're doing it to us too. It's just that the Americans can't see it. They're buying up our companies, our banks, our media. It's the same thing that's going on over here.
And yeah. they grind you down, you see? Like in Iraq, the constant violence and chaos. I mean, the Iraqi papers write, for example, how these huge bombs that go off, you know, in southern neighborhoods and whatnot, how these are done by very sophisticated equipment and explosives that Iraqis don't have access to, or they don't have the ability to manipulate, to work with.
Well,
I mean, this is the thing, is that this, the occupation, the chaos, the, in many cases, the shooting of American soldiers and these, the constant violence, this is being run by outside secret services. I mean,
well, this is the Balkanization process that they used in Serbia.
But there's more than that. You have to look at the fact that the contractors themselves are being attacked. Now, these are the people who are trying to put the water on and the electricity on. They're not military. They were brought over there to turn on the electricity, to put the plumbing back in. They're being attacked. Now, you have to ask, why would the Iraqis attack people who are trying to provide them with water and electricity? There's only one explanation, and that's the Israelis don't really want that country rebuilt at all, and they're attacking the contractors to scare them and chase them out.
But still, the money keeps flowing in there and gets spent, and nothing gets done, and it just seems to just evaporate, disappear.
It's being stolen. The money is being stolen.
Stolen.
Yeah.
Absolutely stolen. And I mean, you know, you can look at 100 examples of how we engage ourselves and pour money at the problem where it gets stolen. And, you know, Eric, I'll give my hats off to you on what you found about NASA. And I have to say, nobody's audited, Fort Knox. We've got no gold sitting in Fort Knox. And no one's audited it since 1948. And if anybody went in there, they'd find it empty. I mean, what we've talked about here is just one example after another, thousands of them across the country, where taxpayer money is being poured into being siphoned off and given to Jewish-run scams.
Well, yeah, plus we don't know where that Star Wars money went to.
Yeah, where's the Star Wars money?
Because you got to look at it. See, people think I'm joking when I say these UFOs are coming from them. It's Zionist flying objects. And I think they're funding a lot of these projects to create these things in order, because they got this crazy plan that they're going to come up with some alien spacecraft and fool us into thinking aliens have landed. I think that's one of their dreams. They just haven't been able to get to it. But that's where a lot of this money may be going, into those aircraft.
Yeah, they call it black ops. But let's get back to this story again, Christopher, because it seems like that they found a convenient patsy to say that the Iranians are involved in all this troublemaking, and that all of these bombs that have been going off have been, the reason they're so technically advanced is because the Iranians have been behind it, making them at home, shipping them into Iraq, and then, you know, they're causing the fractional fighting and the killing of the Sunnis and all this other stuff. And the fact is what they're doing is basically using their own actions, as an excuse to blame Iran for things that Iran has no part of.
Well, that's what they've been doing for a long time. You know, it's not just in the case of these bombs and instability they're causing in Iraq. I just want to read one thing. Michael Ledeen, that's the neocon strategist. What he says that instability in the Middle East is a preferred political state because it facilitates U.S. control of the region. He says, stability is an unworthy American mission and a misleading concept to boot. He says, the real issue is not whether, but how to destabilize. How is it that his daughter wound up, you know, being in charge of the Iraqi budget after the United States took over that country? But this is the thing, is that these people want to destroy Iraq. And one thing they're doing is making life so miserable there that the wealthy people and the people that have intelligence and education are leaving the country.
Either that or they're murdered. Haven't they killed 160 just recently of the best and brightest from the university in Baghdad?
Yes.
Well, that's the other thing they do that people don't realize. By getting rid of the people with skills or the people with intelligence, they leave behind a horde of idiots, which is easier to control. And people don't get it. I mean, without that technical base for even America, we have nothing. We've got nothing but a third world nation, and we're losing that too. They're destroying the families, creating fights between different races and between men and women everywhere.
But they want to depopulate Iraq. Depopulation of Iraq suits their agenda because you can depopulate the country, but you still have something like 330 billion barrels of oil under the ground.
Well, what you don't also know is that I think they have the third largest known reserve of yellow cake.
Mm-hmm.
And uranium is slated to quadruple in price over the next few years because many of the mines they thought had large caches of uranium ore actually don't have it. And the uranium ore has just quadrupled in price and doubled in demand. And Iraq just happens to be a place where plenty of this stuff is floating around.
Mm-hmm. So, one thing I wanted to add is that about this fake terrorism. You know, they caught these two British guys who were dressed up as Shiite fighters back in the fall of 2005, I think it was.
Yep.
They caught these guys in Basra. They unwrapped their turbans. They were driving a car full of explosives and detonators, and they had driven by shot the police and the protesters. When they were caught up with by the Basra police and unraveled, they turned out to be British SAS agents. But now, the thing is that this use of false flag terror is something that the mainstream media completely ignores. This story wasn't reported in the mainstream media. Israel has done this as well. Israel has committed acts of terrorism in Israel in order that the Arabs or the Palestinians get blamed and to stir up the people and to promote this really iron fist response by the Likud party. I mean, people have to understand that the Likud party, this government that runs Israel, it has its origins in Yagun. It has its origins in the most radical militant terrorist groups of the 1940s.
Well, you see that the same false flag operation happened in Indonesia as well, the Bali bombing, and we've got these same agents having done this stuff maybe 20 years ago in Jordan. We've got Abu Nidal having done a lot of these false flag deals. In other words, this has a long history of. These guys are the best criminal terrorists in the world.
Right. Right.
I mean, this isn't something they're learning as they go along. They know how to do this.
But you see, because the American media and by extension the American people have blinders on, it's like they're not able to even consider or understand how false flag terrorism works. You know, I just came back from a meeting with my lawyer who's supposed to represent me in this case, and he thinks that I'm crazy and that we're paranoid. You know, and basically that the majority of the people don't see anything the way that we do, and that we're like basically raving lunatics. I mean, that's how my lawyer views us.
Well, the facts. See, here's the interesting thing, Christopher. The facts say we're absolutely correct. The vitriol and the attacks on us say we're nutters. And
right.
And so what we've got is a square in a circle trying to merge here, and we've got a problem here.
In December, they did polls, and they found that 80% of the American people want U.S. troops out of Iraq
by
the end of next year.
That's right.
And 90% of the Iraqi people want the same thing. 90% of the Iraqi people want us out now, and 90% of the Iraqi people feel that their standard of living, quality of life, is much less and much worse today than it was under Saddam Hussein.
Isn't it interesting they just sped up their bidding for American oil companies to go in and start exploiting their reserves?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just passed this 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. Well,
Christopher, you know, it makes me sick to think, and you know, this is, look, if we're going to spend the country's blood, I mean, and be warmongering country here, a conquest driven people, then why aren't the spoils shared amongst the public? Well, you know, I'm not for this kind of conquest crap, But the fact is they're using our boys to murder people wholesale and then stealing the money for only the elites and then blaming other countries for it. It's really astonishing.
Exactly. And there's a background there. You know, I looked at some of these videos the other day on the TV about how the Americans go into houses and arrest husbands and men of the family in the middle of the night and say, well, you've got too many guns, you know, and you're going out with us. And then they put him on the top of the truck, and then they sell. One American tells the other American, "Well, you know, if he does anything, just you know, do what you have to do." You have to understand that in this country, in the United States, the Arab and the Muslim has been slandered and vilified in the media nonstop for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
And this was done by the Zionist media in Los Angeles and in New York. It is the one ethnic group that has been vilified nonstop. So our young men and women in Iraq, they have grown up, they've been saturated with this Rambo mentality and with this idea that the Arab and the Muslim is an evil person, is linked to Satan, and that these people, that we're doing the right thing, they're completely mindwashed. The American soldiers are the most brainwashed people on the planet.
Sadly, that's true. And you know, I live in a country that gives, or tries to give some balance. Some balance to me is about an 80-20 split. But the French actually talk a great deal about the plight of the Palestinians. They also talk about the North African question, and they actually had to look into their own activities in Algeria. In their war in Algeria. So the French are actually far more balanced news. However, their news is also Zionist controlled. But they don't think they could sell the complete lie to this country.
Well, the Europeans and the French live, you know, cheek by jowl with the Arabs. They have the Arabs and their experience in Africa, and they have the Arabs in Spain, and they have the Arabs in Palestine, and the Muslims in their own country. They have a long history of interacting with the Middle East, whereas Americans are more like Australia, you know, far removed and not understanding the culture, not understanding the background or the history. And so the Americans are more easily exploited by the Zionists, because in general the average American is not nearly as intelligent or well read as his grandparents were, and it's very easy to trick them and to deceive them and to, you know, like a bull, wave the red flag over here and go charge over there. And that's the really unfortunate thing. I mean, it's the American military is being played for fools.
Well, Eric, you want to talk a little bit about the control of the book publishing business and the university structure. I mean, you can't find almost a university president who's not in the cabal, or you can't find all the department chairmen and the history book writers and these the companies that are printing the books. They're almost lock, stock, and barrel owned by this group.
Well, it's not just that, but it's also the internet. And most of the videos that are coming out about 9/11 now are also coming from them. There's another one called Improbable Collapse that's coming out by Mike Berger. And they'll use people like Professor Jones perhaps as bait, but then they've got Jim Hoffman in there, and, you know, it's basically going to be more propaganda. And what's even more interesting, you've got to take a look at that Hustler magazine that just came out. They're talking in there. They're giving promotion to Alex Jones.
I don't think my wife would let me, Eric.
Well, no, you look at the scanned images of it. It says there is over $20 million on the next budget for the Loose Change video. You've got to ask, people have to ask themselves, who is giving these people $20 million to make the next version of Loose Change? When the rest of us have to scrounge for anything.
Well, you know, the seed money came from that Simon family in Indianapolis.
Right. And that's very important, because the Simon family is also the paymasters for Lee Hamilton, who was the co-chairman of the 9/11 Commission and was also the co-chairman of the recent Iraq Study Group.
And he was also the lawyer. He has connections to the law firm that was doing the deal with the country north of Afghanistan for the pipeline deal.
Right. It's all very incestuous, you see. But what you always find, what you find time and time again, which I tried to point out in this article about the Zionist occupation of Iraq, is that it's very seldom is it the first man on the totem pole who's the devoted Zionist. It's his key advisor. It's his deputy. Or it is the person who replaces him when he goes down. For example, the way that we had the Marine guy who was in charge of Homeland Security and all that, and then from Pennsylvania, when he went down, they offered a replacement from New York. I forgot his name, but he was the former chairman of the committee of the police, in charge of the police. But when it was found that his mother had an unsavory past, they investigated his mother, then they took him away out of the cards, and they put Michael Chertoff in. And the mainstream media didn't even pay any attention at all to Chertoff's past. So you see, that's the way it works. They put the second player, the deputy, the advisor. These are all Zionists.
Well, and interesting, you know, there's an example right now where they're trying to divert you away from who's actually being honest. You got Wesley Clark coming out saying it's a mistake to go into Iraq this way, trying to set himself up as an opponent to this. But this guy, a Rhodes Scholar, did the same trip as Bill Clinton. His heritage is Jewish on half of his family. He sets himself up as to be exactly like many of these cryptos that we've looked into in the past.
Well, it's safe for these Jews to criticize the war now because they've accomplished, the goal has been accomplished. Now they can turn coat and they can criticize the war effort because the disaster has been done. Iraq has been destroyed. The nation is on the verge of an utter collapse. Nothing works. You know, millions of people have left the country. Half a million people have been killed, never mind all the ones that died during the period of sanctions. I mean, this war against Iraq, Americans have to understand, is entering its 17th year this month.
Yeah.
This war began in the January of 1991.
Yeah.
And it did not stop. The 12-year period of sanctions was extremely brutal, where you know, the country was under siege. They weren't allowed to buy the medicine and the food and the material that they needed for their industry. And something like a million or a million and a half Iraqi, primarily women and children, died as a result. You know, the siege that was imposed on Iraq for that 12-year period, you know, and accompanied with all these bombings in the no-fly zones, this was a war. This was a war by another name.
And you'll notice that...
It was on for 17 years.
Well, it was a genocide is what it was.
Yes.
Yeah, but you'll also notice that when they complain about the war, they're complaining about Bush. It's all directed to Bush.
That's right, Eric.
And this is what is fooling people. They did this in the last elections. They point Bush, and all of them, John Stewart, all of these so-called liberals, are saying it's Bush's war, Bush is bad. Even Oberman, what's his
Oberman,
name?
Oberman, yeah.
All he does is focus on Bush. And you've got this, I don't know who she is, Sansara Taylor. She was on TV shouting down Rahm Emanuel, which looks really good, but then what is she complaining about? Impeach Bush? And then what? Have President Cheney? None of these are solutions. You could replace Bush. You could replace Cheney. We still don't have any solution. We've got to get these people out of the media, the government, the schools. We got to get them out of the so-called alternative media.
Well, if you listen to Lorraine Day, we got to get them out of our medical system. They're killing a quarter of a million people a year with bad medical decisions.
Well, yeah, if they're all over the place, and so this is why this. If the people fall for this Bush nonsense, then we're just going to replace Bush with maybe Cheney or that other one,
Pelosi,
and get nowhere.
But Eric, these are the false arguments. They're portraying, like I said, they're portraying the top guy on the totem pole. They're portraying Bush and Cheney and these people, these, you know, manipulated politicians as being the problem. Well, but it makes a lot of sense because they are our political leaders and should be held accountable. But without addressing the Zionist design, the Zionist leadership, the Zionist funding, the Zionist money tree that exists behind these leaders, you'll never have a problem.
And we have to start taking, you know, the people that support this, Bush did it, people like Sansara Taylor, they were there shouting down Rahm Emanuel. All they have is impeach Bush. These people should be told, you either get with the program or you're going to be considered one of the criminals. Because they are inadvertently or deliberately, we don't know which, one or the other, they are either inadvertently or deliberately helping the Zionist movement. They got more of them into Congress last time because of this.
That's right. We actually have more Zionists in our Congress now than we had before this last election.
And people have to start telling people like Sansara Taylor. She was on television. She was on Bill O'Reilly. She shouted down Rahm Emanuel. Someone's going to have to tell her. She either gets with the program or she's one of them. As far as we're concerned, she can hang with them.
Now, I have a question about this guy, Frederick Kagan. And what is he's got a brother as well. What is his story, Christopher?
Frederick Kagan and his brother, I think Robert, I think they both went to West Point. Their father is Donald Kagan. He's a Lithuanian Jewish immigrant. I think he has an eye problem. These are the three fellows who were, they're very key players at the American Enterprise Institute and at the Project for the New American Century. Mm. Donald Kagan, I think, is the co-author. Frederick and Robert both are signed on to it, and they have been pushing. They have been lobbying. Even back in the Clinton administration, they have been lobbying for the United States to go in and take out Saddam Hussein. And Frederick Kagan is listened to by the White House, currently by the White House. He's the guy that gets he's the neocon, you know, who is still able to talk. We won't listen to people, Americans won't listen to Richard Perle or Paul Wolfowitz now. They moved on to, you know, new positions. But Frederick Kagan, they're dragging him out, and he's the one who says, he's telling the president we have to surge 20, 30, 40,000 troops in Baghdad, in Anbar province, and that the surge has to go on for a long time. That is at least 18 months. That's not a surge. That's just an escalation.
That's right.
Escalation of an occupation. The war is over. Iraq has its government. You know, but if this government of Quislings is not suitable for the Iraqi people, that's their problem. I agree with people who say that it's time for the American troops to get out of there and to let the Iraqis take over their nation. But of course, you see, that's never been the plan.
That's right.
The plan has always been for a long, extended occupation. If you look at what the Iraq Study Group said, both Lee Hamilton and Baker, they both said that American troops are going to be in Iraq for a long, long time. We're going to have a robust presence there for a long, long time. And Lee Hamilton, our man who's paid by the Simon family of Indiana, he said that, you know, we shouldn't let the Iraqi government think that they're going to have any authority to tell us when we should stay, when we should leave the country. So this whole idea that we're there at the behest of the Iraqi government is also a sham.
Yeah, well, you know, interesting to bring back this other gentleman that we talked about earlier, Ari Fleischer's connection to the Lubavitcher movement, these radicalized Orthodox group out of Brooklyn, which now has a worldwide presence. In fact, they're the lead consul for the Israeli government right now, and he's actually been accepted as a rabbi, I believe, or he's moved into the position of rabbi, and his brother is working within this group. So, I mean, look, everywhere you look, and I often thought, and somebody else has confirmed to me on their own research, that Ari Fleischer was really somebody who was a liaison between the criminals telling Monkey George what to do.
Very likely. Very likely. You know, Ari Fleischer's position as spokesman for the administration is a cabinet-level position. He sits in on cabinet-level meetings when the decisions are made.
That's right.
What a perfect place to have an agent, right?
Uh-huh.
And he's the person who explains the decisions to the American people. And as we know, you know, the Fleischer family, his brother, his older brother, works for the Israeli Air Force, the former commander of the Israeli Air Force, and Israeli pilots. These are the people who pay him. I mean, these are agents of a foreign state. You know, Ari Fleischer and his brother, you know, they should not be in any position in Iraq. They should not be in any position in the U.S. government.
That's right. Well, and Eric, you know, it's interesting to look at Morgan Reynolds being in this administration and all of a sudden coming out and starting to parrot this nonsense. He was sent out to do this job from this administration, so they were already doing damage control way back when, knowing full well that their plan was going to get exposed if they didn't start covering it up. And what is this guy doing now, and what has he done, Eric?
Well, right now, him and the Scholars for Truth are having the most obnoxious fight imaginable. They're fighting over whether it was space weapons or nuclear bombs that took the towers down. And it looks like what they did is they built up this Scholars for 9/11 Truth, and now they're degrading into just obnoxious fights. And so maybe that one of their plans was to create this movement, bring a bunch of people together, and then have it break down.
Right.
Which makes them all look like idiots. Plus, everybody gets discouraged because the people that joined this think, oh, what did I join? This is hopeless. And one thing that most people did not see, it just happened a few days ago. Frank Weltner, he's of the JewWatch.com site.
Yep.
A video went out there. Unfortunately, I saw it, but not too many people saw it before it was removed. This video was of him talking to the camera, acting like he was crazy, some sort of perverted, you know, something. What it looked like to me is that this is one of those secret blackmail tapes that they hold on people. They made him do this tape is what it looks like, and they were holding it and decided they need to put pressure on him for some reason. So they put it out on the YouTube and then removed it after about a day or two, so only a few of us happened to see it. This is a sign that Frank Weltner is one of their blackmailed puppets. JewWatch is one of their sites. And it brings in all the rest of what has been going on with American Free Press and Mark Lane. All of these Nazi sites, all of these white supremacist groups, every time you look at them, they seem to be under Zionist control, either through blackmail or they are Zionists themselves. And they
You know, Eric, I gotta stop you there because it was very clear to me when they got David Duke to go over to this Iranian conference that they were setting up the whole conference to be discredited by him, and it's exactly what happened. And it's any time that this guy pops his head up, you see that you can link him to the Grand Wizard of the KKK and white only, you know, we hate everybody except whites and nationalist sickos. And I mean, and what they do is they make the rest of us look like we're racist mad dogs. And the simple fact is it works quite well because they get the press coverage.
Well, they do, but what they do with Frank Weltner, you can tell him that what's happening to him is he's a sign. He's one of those blackmailed puppets, and they just arrested Kevin Alfred Strom, who is part of the National Alliance. And it's real quiet. You look around for the news article about that. You can hardly find anybody talking about it. And it was the FBI that did it. The FBI was in Bali, Indonesia also. The FBI is something, Federal Bureau of Israel. They are, whenever they arrest somebody, you gotta wonder why. They're probably putting him in jail because he's getting out of control. What I think is happening is some of their puppets are getting rebellious. And they're arresting some of them. They put that video out of Frank Weltner to help put him in his place. It could be a sign that even their own blackmailed puppets are starting to rebel against these people.
Well, I see a movement here away from the lies and toward the truth. I mean, Zionism as a subject is on a lot more lips these days, Christopher. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that maybe people are becoming aware of it, but in general, the mainstream media does a very bad job of you know, educating the American people about the history of Zionism or what it is. And you know, when I wrote an article about that very subject and Ehud Olmert's ties to 9/11, my newspaper didn't print it, and you know, they started to really try to get rid of me.
Well, and you know that we just got slandered by Piper again, trying to manipulate this 84-year-old guy over here to try to put all kinds of stuff out against us, like I'm luring him to France, as if I would do that. Mm-hmm. And nonsense like this. In other words, if they can't battle us on our research, they're going to try to discredit us through slander, lies, and nonsense. And I can't help but wonder, what is that place that you worked? I mean, it's a
yeah.
Nest.
Well, one of the strange things is that Michael Piper has a good relationship with this Barry Chamish fella. He's a Canadian Jew who's a settler on the West Bank, and he's quite, he doesn't question for one minute his right to settle on Palestinian land, international laws and treaties notwithstanding. And so his actions are a violation of international law. And he's a close friend with, he does a lot of discussion with, Mike Piper. And this guy is to the right of Attila the Hun. And he calls me, a Jew hater. And of course, you know, I'm not a Jew hater. There's never, I ask these people who say these things to find anything that I've ever written that's anti-Semitic. And of course they can't find it.
Well, that's another thing you just mentioned. They're changing. I've noticed in the past week or so, they're changing from anti-Semite to anti-Jew and Jew-hater. Yeah. I think the anti-Semite is losing its power over people, and what you're seeing now is anti-Jew.
Yeah, and so, I will state for the record, I'm against criminals, not Jews, and if I find a nest of criminal Jews, then they've got to be outed.
Well, the other thing you can do to fight back is you just take their expressions and turn it against them. Tell them they're anti-Goy or anti-American, anti-Arab. Just do what they do, and it makes their expressions look, people start realizing, you know, these are just childish name-calling. That's all this is.
It almost seems like Muff Kakar over there is involved behind the scenes doing the sliming, because I'm sure he's still working right behind Piper, no pun intended. It seems like the kind of sliming that goes on that he did, the attack dog tactics of Wing TV, seem to have morphed into a new round coming from this group, Eric.
But it may not be him. It may be their policy. They may be taught this in wherever they get their training. Because, you know, it's a policy. You'll see that with everybody. Keep them all fighting. That's their policy. Break everybody down. Send messages to people. Keep them suspicious. Keep them angry. It's a policy, not just with Wing TV. I think it may be whoever gave them their training has found out that this is one of the most effective things of all. Keep people fighting with each other.
Well, I mean, that happened with me, Christopher. They took elements of a conversation I had and took all of the parts of it from beginning, middle, and end and made a story out of it that had nothing to do with what was said. And then they sent this over to your email box trying to tell you that I'm saying this and I'm saying that, because I got a copy of the email. And I said, holy shit, that this has nothing to do with what I said.
Well, that's what they want to do. You know, I get emails from people who tell me that I shouldn't be talking to you and all kinds of, they really insult you and Eric Hochschmidt a lot. And it seems like they must be really mad because you're being effective.
Well, if we weren't kicking them in the stomach, they wouldn't be worried about us. They wouldn't even bother.
Yeah, you know, it's like 9/11. I don't know if we're going to talk about this, but I made some new discoveries. Eric and I, we came up with some very important information. Somebody came forward with information this week. It's very good when people come forward with information. We always have to sift it out and find out if it's good or bad or what. But in any case, you know, if I find that the British people are involved, or Americans, or Japanese in this case, or Israelis, you know, it's not anti-Japanese to mention Japanese involvement. It's not anti-British to mention British involvement. Nor is it anti-Jew to mention Israeli involvement.
Oh, yeah.
State actors.
And that brings up a good point. You see, when you look at 9/11, you have to wonder, why didn't the Japanese investigate the stock market exchange? Somebody stopped the Japanese, because they said they were going to investigate those stock market transactions. And this may be what Christopher was just talking about. The Japanese involvement may have to do with their banks that were in the World Trade Center.
Well, and you did find out some interesting things about two computer rooms in both buildings that had some very odd facts around their setup before this attack by these criminals. What did you find, Chris?
Yeah, well, in a nutshell, what we found is that both planes that struck the World Trade Center basically appear to have been homed in on computer rooms. They both struck computer rooms. I mean, I don't mean just a few computers. They struck rooms, in one case, an entire floor that was occupied with computer batteries and servers. In the case of the South Tower, the 81st floor, the entire 81st floor was taken up with what's called UPS batteries. That's uninterrupted power supply batteries. These huge, very heavy, very solid things. They're like 6 feet tall. And the entire room was taken up with them. Yet the NIST report doesn't mention anything about, this was part of Fuji Bank. Fuji Bank had built this floor to provide power in the event of an outage. And a person who used to work at the bank came forward and talked to Eric, and Eric put me in touch with him, and he said, yeah, you know, it just occurred to him that seemed very weird, and he talked about what was in that floor, and I thought it was really important because...
Well, it is important, but they also mentioned that they were, these things weren't even hooked up.
Right. He said that the whole floor was full of these batteries, but they were never turned on. And these are huge, huge batteries. Now, this explains, you see, what's important about this explains most likely the source of the molten metal that we saw falling in large, large amounts from the 81st floor immediately before the collapse of the South Tower.
Yeah.
And so I took this and I said to myself, I said, well, geez, if Flight 175 or that plane went right into the computer room there, it's very likely that there was a homing device in there. It's very likely that there were explosives and or thermite. Something certainly created all that molten metal. So I said, well, then the North Tower must have the similar, you know, profile. If this is it. And lo and behold, we find that Marsh & McLennan, that's Jerry Bremer's old company, the insurance company, they occupied those floors 93 to 99, and 100 of the North Tower. And the plane went directly into the 95th floor and went right into their computer room. I called them up and I said, you know, the NIST report says that you had a data center on the north side and the east side of Flight 95. And the man from Marshall McLennan said, no, it wasn't. It's not really a data center. It's our computer room. And it was a walled computer room. Now, this is important because, you see, in both cases, you have a secure computer room. In the South Tower, it's the entire 81st floor. And that means that people... Technical people and contractors can have access to that equipment. You don't know, like Eric says, you don't know who those computers are working for. You don't know what's in those batteries, racks and racks and racks of very heavy batteries. You don't know if there's thermite in there or not. They were never turned on. So this is a very key piece of evidence because it confirms that both planes were flown or flew directly into secure computer centers in both towers. I think that's a very significant piece of evidence.
Well, also, I think the thermite was intended to destroy evidence, not to help cut the tower apart. So you have to wonder what else was up there. And, you know, maybe part of what they're trying to destroy is if they had homing devices, they would want to get rid of that. Plus, they may have gotten rid of people. You could completely destroy bodies with thermite. You'll never see any traces.
Eric, you know that thermite, when thermite reacts, it burns through everything on the way down.
Everything, yeah.
And this is the thing that if you have tons of thermite, which you appear to have tons of thermite, obviously, on the 81st floor, when those buildings collapse, all of that thermite will continue to react. And this is most likely the source of the extremely hot pools of molten metal that were found under each of the collapsed towers.
And this is months after the event.
Well, plus they may have had more of it in the basements anyway. And see, the other thing we don't know, they may have gone in there and dumped some thermite in the piles anyway, just to help make sure it's all destroyed. Because, you see, they may have wanted to get rid of a lot of evidence. We don't even know how much was in the basements. How much... Or did they add some after the collapse and just come over with a dump truck?
I think that they had tons of thermite in those towers prior to the collapse. And, you know, thermite will continue to react without, it doesn't need oxygen. It can react underwater. It can react in a vacuum.
Oh, yeah, but you see, once the explosives are going off, this stuff's going to be blown all over the place. In order for it to be pooled into the basement, they probably have to have some in the basement, you see?
Mm-hmm. Because here's the interesting thing too. When you take a look at 9/11 mysteries, when they actually took photographs of the shape charges, you can tell clearly that you don't get an angled cut on beam after beam unless it was done with intent. Now that's a no brainer. After I got a chill on my neck, Eric, when I saw that. That just after the guy from Controlled Demolitions explains to you how they placed the charge, the next photograph are several of these beams cut exactly like he said.
Oh yeah, well they can do that with the shape charge. I know, and thermite can do some things too, but thermite has an advantage that you can use it for destroying evidence. Nothing is going to survive the temperature, even bones. So it's a perfect way of destroying things. And it's a great way they could put it in Building 7, too, because remember, Building 7 had the same problem with the incredible heat.
Now we have Bremer and Kissinger lined up together, don't we?
Yeah, very much. Bremer was Kissinger's managing director for years. Then he became the CEO and chairman of Marsh & McLennan Crisis Group, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of Marsh & McLennan, which was the company that was hit by the first plane that hit the North Tower. That plane went right into their office, and it hit at the 96th floor slab, and it was going down. So it was pulling, it was going to 500 miles an hour, 540 miles an hour, I think it said, or 440, but it was coming down in a direction. It was honed in on that computer room. And you know, you look at how these planes behaved, how they acted, and the way they were flown. And I believe that these planes were being guided into the World Trade Center. And I think, you know, we have to get people to come forward who tell us what they know, who put that stuff on the 81st floor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And who had access to the 95th floor computer room? And who, what kind of contractors were in there? I mean, the guy told us, the person who worked at one of the Japanese banks, he told us that these very heavy, solid black batteries, rows and rows and rows of batteries are put on the 81st floor of the South Tower. He said they were put in at night. And I said, geez, I mean, how conspiratorial does this get?
And but not only were they put in at night, they were put in not just after the sale and just before the attack.
Yeah, they were
so
put
in that couple of month window.
Yeah, and he told us something. You know, I checked his evidence in the NIST report, and it's true. But you have to have information like that so you know where to look in the NIST report. He told us that the 81st floor had been torn up, and that Fuji Bank and Leslie Robertson and Associates had reinforced the floor to carry a heavier load. And sure enough, in 1999, the Port Authority of New Jersey, New York, approved for this Fuji Bank to tear up the floor and to reinforce those trusses. You know, the floors were like 4 inches thick of lightweight concrete and pans, and they tore that up, then they reinforced those trusses, then they built a false floor 3 feet high, and then they had racks and racks and racks of these server-sized batteries in there. Well, the question is, why didn't the NIST report tell us what was on the 81st floor? The 81st floor is the floor that Flight 175 went through. And their report, their final report, has a big conspicuous blank next to floor 79, 81, and 82. And I tried and tried and tried all spring to try and get information from NIST. What was on that floor? And they never responded. But when I called up and I told them I know what's on that floor, then they confirmed it.
Well, now, there's another possibility that they wanted those planes to really explode powerfully when they hit those floors, making it look powerful enough to do, have done the damage that they intended to do themselves. In other words, it's clear that a building of that size could never be destroyed by a single plane hit unless the explosion that came from it was powerful enough or in the eyes of the public to have done it. And they, you know, or I don't know, but I mean, it looks like to me, if thermite was there, that would work as a story because we see the evidence of molten metal, but we also need to see it from the, they were going to do this in on TV, and they needed,
right.
They needed it to look like the Big Bang Theory.
It needed to be spectacular. It was a Hollywood type designed demolition. It was meant to be shown on television for the entire world to see.
That's right.
And that's the thing. This was, if you've ever seen the movie, The Little Drummer Girl, that's a very instructive movie to see about Zionist terrorism. It's by John Le Carré, from the John Le Carré's book, about Palestinian and Israeli terrorism, how these two entities are fighting it out in Europe and in mosques and synagogues and blowing up each other's houses of worship and whatnot. And it's very interesting because, you know, there are scenes where a synagogue is blown up, supposedly, but actually all the charges are placed in the windows and whatnot, and so it appears to be something, but it's not. And that's the thing. This entire 9/11 hoax is a huge spectacle that was made,
yeah,
you know, made for television. It was made to deceive millions of people.
Well, that's why I think that plane may have hit the corner of the South Tower. Everyone initially thought, oh, it almost missed. It almost missed completely. But it may have done that on purpose in order to create the big spray of fuel out there in the front of the, you know, on the side of the building facing Brooklyn and Queens
and the Norday brothers.
Eric, one thing I was thinking about today is if these were Arabs flying these planes, right? And if these Arabs were flying by visual sight and they saw that the target, you know, I'm going to smack into that World Trade Center, you would have think they would have aimed at it, gotten themselves right straight, and gone straight into it, right?
And lower down too.
In both cases, these planes are turning as they hit the building. They're turning and descending. So I get the impression that these planes were being flown remotely and then guided and pulled in at the last minute by these homing devices.
And the thermite would then help destroy the evidence, you see, and the evidence of any plane parts that were remaining. So they may have wanted to have a lot of it in the floors.
Well, isn't there a company, an Israeli company or an Israeli-connected company that has guided systems like that?
Of course. Well, there's a company that Dov Zakheim used to be the on the board of directors with, and they I forgot the name of it, but they provide these remote landing devices and things like that, exactly this kind of avionics. But that's one of the points I make time and time again, is that the Israeli Mossad is invested in many companies, aviation companies, avionics, and electronics. You know, all of these
and software
companies. Yeah.
Software. And they also have the guns, the remote controlled guns that can do a lot of these fancy sniping jobs that like they're doing in Iraq, with the guns with even cameras on them.
Yeah. And there are these guns that they mount on the top of these vehicles, where the actual person who's shooting the gun is sitting in some air conditioned office in Qatar or someplace, or in Tel Aviv or Langley, Virginia. And the gun is shooting, you know, as the guys are driving, but the actual person who's controlling the gun is miles and miles away.
Oh, that's scary.
Idiot.
And I mean, what are they going to stop putting guns on telephone poles and shooting you as you walk by?
Very much so.
Well,
this is where those
snipers that have video of themselves shooting Arabs, you know, those are the type of guns.
Mm-hmm.
These are not coming from some poor Iraqi who's, you know, struggling just to find food. This is advanced technology.
Mm-hmm.
And so these sniper videos, it's all evidence. It's all coming from Israel.
Yeah. In fact, an Israeli company boasts that they have those guns, Eric.
It's all this right in front of your face. If we could just get people to not keep falling for this, Bush is doing it, the Vatican's doing it, Barry Chambers is going on radio after radio trying to push the Vatican stuff. You got these so-called liberals, you know, they're trying to bring themselves forward and pushing. The deception right now is just extreme again. Except now, instead of trying to cover up 9/11, I think they realize it's hopeless, start blaming Bush, and we'll bring in the Democrats. And
you know, it's interesting. I know the man who was the chairman of the company. It was an American company that made those guns originally. I think it's called Precision Remotes Incorporated. It's out of Richmond, California. And I happen to know him because he engaged himself in the Estonia catastrophe a few years later. And he's a millionaire. He lives down in New Mexico. And he funded one of the diving operations of the ship to the Estonia to find out what happened to it. And when I was speaking at a symposium, he never wants me to speak, because when I talk about the Estonia catastrophe, I point out that, you know, weapons that were being carried on this ship, with hundreds and hundreds of innocent people being used as like human shields, that these weapons were being sent to Israel. They were being brought from the former Soviet Union to Sweden, taken to the airport, and flown down to Israel. And when I spoke at a symposium, and people had heard all day long about what happened to the Estonia ship and how 852 people died, naturally some people wanted to know, well, who did it? I mean, that's the first question we want to know. And I got up there, nobody could answer the question. I got up there and I explained my evidence that, you know, points to Israeli involvement. And my millionaire friend who used to make these remote control guns with Israel couldn't contain himself. He's just groaning and moaning, oh, here he goes again. You see? And so that's what you find. You find time and time again these people who are muffling or stifling discussion of Israeli involvement are themselves tied, business-wise or otherwise, to the state of Israel.
Well, and I mean, you know, then they've got their own police force in the FBI. They've got their willingness to kill to keep what they want controlled. It doesn't look good for us unless we can get more help. And the help is, I mean, we've got decent numbers, guys. I mean, we've put together the right story. It's basically now to start disseminating it and keeping people focused on the fact that there is no other group of people telling as much truth as us. Simply there isn't.
The help we need, Daryl, the help we really need is we need more people like that former bank employee, people who know something.
Yeah.
Who knows something about 9/11, who knows something about what was going on in their office or on their floor or in their building at the World Trade Center or at the Pentagon or wherever they work. And if they say, you know, this is something that doesn't make sense, they need to come forward. They need to contact Eric Hirschman in California or me or you and give us this information, because that's the only way we're going to solve this crime.
But the problem is a lot of people probably went to the FBI or Homeland Security, or Alex Jones, or Webster Tarpley. This is one of the reasons I think they keep these people out there, because right. When the FBI gets them, then they've got it, they can seal the information up, and then they know who's got it.
Exactly.
And they've got to be careful. If people don't take this deception seriously, they're going to end up like that Frank Weltner of Jew Watch. They're going to find themselves in one of these positions or on their hands and knees barking like a dog. So people have to watch it. Don't trust the FBI. Don't trust Homeland Security. Don't trust these people that call themselves 9/11 truth seekers. All they have to do is look at which of them will even let us speak, for example. Just look at that connection alone. You'll see Kyle Hansen, Mike Berger, all they do is talk about each other, promote each other, and pretend the rest of us don't exist. And this should be a clue to you.
Well, you know, we've tried to make the claims rational, Eric, and tried to put them in front of people to look at. And in spite of that, I every day I get people saying, "Oh, you're a liar," and "Oh, you're this and that," and you know that you're not going to be able to fix that credibility problem with some people, because they just don't have.
Well, you know what it is.
Capacity.
The one of the concepts people just have the hardest time with. They'd say, well, why would Webster Tarpley or Alex Jones say the truth? Why would they put out so much truth if they're not really trying to tell the truth? It's the same with Al Capone. When Al Capone, imagine when Al Capone's being accused of crimes, he tells his own friends, "Hey, you guys, pretend you're police officers, news reporters, investigators, you turn me in." So imagine his own friend saying, "Oh, Al Capone, he stole from this store over here, and he cheated on his taxes here." If they get to turn him in, they are in control of what happens to him. Plus, the gang is still in control anyway. Even if he is taken out, the gang remains in control. And that's what they're doing now. This is the concept people have to understand. They can turn themselves in because they're going to focus all attention on just a few people, like Bush and Cheney, maybe Rumsfeld. But the gang, the Zionist gang, remains in control. This is what people have to understand. It doesn't matter if Alex Jones gives you some truth or Webster Tarpley gives you some truth. They're liars. It's the same thing with Al Capone's gang. They're all liars. And even these so-called liberals, everybody on the television that complain about Bush, they're all lying.
Well, and you can look at the policy. There's been no policy shift on Iraq, in spite of the fact that 80% of the public wants us out of there.
Now,
and so, I mean, the proof is in the doing here.
Yeah, but now think about this. Remember, just a little while ago, did you hear on the news, the Democrats were going to have what they called a symbolic vote against Iraq. Okay? A symbolic vote. Okay, let's assume this thing finally blows open, and people are angry at all these Zionists. Well, what me and maybe some of you like to do, let's have a symbolic vote not to hang all these Zionists. Okay? That's the same thing. You tell Alex Jones, "Well, Alex, when they come to hang you, I'll symbolically say I don't really believe in the hanging." That's what they're telling us. They're going to symbolically vote against the war. Well, we'll symbolically vote against not hanging them, okay? This is what people have to start realizing. It's all deception. The people are being fooled.
Yeah. And look, I got to tell you, I have talked to some people recently, last night, in fact, and, you know, they're still believing that the Muslims are evil and that they did all this stuff to America. I mean, there are many people across the United States who still don't even have the first clue, let alone the full truth. It's frightening. Christopher, you know, in spite of all the efforts that so many of the people who follow the work we do have made, we're still out there in the wilderness a bit.
Yeah, I guess so. And, I think we've done a great job with your website. And,
yeah.
You know, even though they meant to shut me up and to humiliate me and everything else, thanks to you and Eric Hochschmidt, I'm still able to get some stories out and, you know, this, you know, write about this because, I've always written from evidence. I've always written about, you know, what we find. And I don't have a dog in this fight. I just want to get the truth out. Because 9/11 is an unsolved crime, and this unsolved crime is the seminal event of our time. And it's being used to wage wars, illegal wars of aggression in the Middle East,
and to get this country, you know, to take this country from a peaceful nation, a rather civilized nation, it's dragged it down into this police state that's just gung-ho to go to war everywhere. What does this mean for this nation? What kind of nation will it be for my children, my grandchildren, if we continue on this ridiculous path?
Well,
and that's why the truth has to come out and the guilty parties have to be found. Otherwise, we won't be able to correct it.
That's right. That is exactly right. And it's exactly my motivation for trying to do this, is that I don't want to leave this mess to the next group. I mean, because I'll tell you something, with the newest technologies being applied against the public, there may not be a next time. We may just be permanently enslaved. I mean, look, once the Holy Roman Empire turned on itself and started cannibalizing its own society, we had the Dark Ages for 600 years.
Right. You know, another thing people need to realize, everybody who subscribed to American Free Press and Barnes Review, they ought to start wondering what is going on with their names and addresses. Now that you realize that this organization is not what it claims to be, those people should be helping expose this. Because this is what's going on with Iraq. You look at them, they're picking out the people with skills, with intelligence, and getting rid of them. And that may be what people like the Friends of the American Free Press were, and the Barnes Review, and Jew Watch, and David Duke. Find out who is wise enough to know what's going on, get their names and addresses, then when the time comes, start picking them up and getting rid of them. So the people that were subscribers, they should be helping to get this information out for their own protection and everyone else's.
Well, isn't it interesting that the Barnes Review is getting a lot of press over at Rivero's site?
Oh, it is.
Oh, 4 or 5 different articles in the last 3 weeks.
And you see, you also have to wonder about all these so-called Holocaust deniers that get put in jail. How many of them are even real? The real ones seem to be the ones that get beaten, like Professor Forasson. You know, the ones that don't get all this nice publicity and all this, you know, television coverage. You don't see him getting all this television coverage like Irving does. And Piper will defend Irving again. He was doing it again on the other night. What is with this David Irving? Why do they hold him up? Well, it's a sign that he's one of theirs also.
Yep.
And see,
exactly.
Once you find one of these people, it's like Wing TV. Once Wing TV exposed themselves, you'll start realizing, look at who they promote, who they are friends with.
Who are they publishing for? Who are they doing deals with?
Yeah, and you start realizing it's a big nest. You can start identifying them. And now you got this improbable collapse video coming out. People should not be buying this stuff. They shouldn't say, well, there's a couple bits of truth in here. So what? These are the criminals. They should be taking their names down, saying these are the people that need to be arrested.
That's right. And you know, I keep going back to this with Eric, Christopher. We need to involve our police departments in knowing the truth. I mean, look, they are going to be the front line here, and you saw the firsthand result of a police department who has fallen victim to the propaganda. And what we need to do is have people willing to go into their smaller communities, because the big cities are lost, I would say. But the smaller communities across the country where you might live next door to the policeman that you have serving you. And it might be a lot easier for you to start saying, look, you know, when the fan and the crap come together, I want you to know the facts.
It's amazing that the Anti-Defamation League has been allowed to propagandize the police forces across this nation.
Yeah.
And to create these blacklists. I mean, this is so Soviet. This is so really awful that they're able to do this and then to portray people like you and me and Eric as being somehow enemies of the state or what have you. And you know, that's the only explanation for the way that I was treated. And still am being treated. It's a blacklist. There's a blacklist. And if you're a patriot, if you're standing up for truth, if you're trying to find the truth about 9/11, if you question the government version, your name is mud.
Yeah, but you know, another thing, I was talking to a policeman in my city, and he went through the taser training, and his attitude is, they're telling people, this is safe, here, try it. He tried it, he said he'll never want to do it again, but these people, they're being fooled into thinking these things are safe. That's why they're so willing to use them on everybody else. They're being told that, don't worry about it. It's like a zap when you walk across a carpet. And of course, he said it hurt so bad, he would never want to do it again. But what people don't realize is you could be getting internal injuries from this. You just don't see them right away. It's electricity going into your body. They sometimes do it in your back. That's a typical location. It could be affecting their nerves in your back. It could affect your kidneys. You're not going to see it necessarily until years later. And then you won't even realize what's causing the trouble. People should not be treating volts of electricity, 50,000 volts. You cannot be treating this as a toy. And yet, if you look on YouTube, you will find people playing with these things. Not policemen. I mean, the policemen are shocking each other, but there are actually people playing with them.
Yeah.
And treating it as a toy. And this, the Taser company themselves, I mean, what they need to do, we need to be taking those executives and tasering them. Say, oh, well, how funny is it now?
But Eric, that's just the thing, is that it's our society is becoming more and more brutal. We're being turned into a militant police state, society with extremely brutal people. Imagine what it's gonna be like when 150,000 guys men and women who've been in Iraq for long, long periods of time, when they come home to the United States. Imagine what it's going to be like when these people come back and try to fit back into society.
Well, one of them, my mom met, and he won't even talk about Iraq. Some of them are in a state of
They're not allowed to.
Well, they're also, it's like, I don't care. Don't even talk about anything. Mm-hmm. They don't care about anything. I mean, the whole place could be falling apart, and they're still not going to care.
Right.
They've been demoralized. They're beyond hope. So what we got to do is maybe with the police, if we could just start educating the police and telling them, you've got to stop this. You got to look at what's going on here, because they have the organization and the ability to actually do something. This is what's so surprising. They have the legal right, the organization, the weapons. They could go into Larry Silverstein's office today and go get the guy. They could go into Chertoff's office and say, that's enough. We've got enough evidence to arrest you.
But they don't have the courts.
Yeah, I mean, they could do something, but what Christopher was saying earlier about his lawyer being pressured, this is another one where this idea that we got to get rid of Bush. Getting rid of Bush, what's that going to do for our legal system? Our legal system is totally worthless. The police are under control. We could get rid of Bush, we still have a problem, even with President Cheney, even with President Pelosi. We have more to deal with here than this Bush. It's bigger than Bush. And so people have to stop falling for this Democrat nonsense.
Well, gentlemen, you know, I think we've done a great synopsis of those two articles today and talked about the issues that surround it. And, you know, I don't want to add too much to the file as it stands right now, because it stays at an emailable size as we speak. And I'd like to keep it that way so people can move this information around. It is very important, ladies and gentlemen, that you take these files, take the information that Eric puts as a supplement to it, and send it to people. Send it to friends, relatives, family members, colleagues. Print it out if you need to. Send this stuff everywhere you can possibly think of. And if you're from outside the country, which 40% of you are, start sharing this with other English-speaking friends of yours so that they are brought up to speed on just how dark an hour and how late an hour it is. This is a war between honesty, truth, and the future of our world versus criminality, sickness, and enslavement. And
right.
If we don't turn to this moment, we are cooked. Our goose is cooked. So get moving and get started on this fight today. It's up to you, because the three of us can only put this effort out and in your hands. You've got to take it to the next level. Without you, there's nothing. Now, I know we've got the thousands of people listening to this. That's nothing. We need 10 times that number to make a real difference. And we need to start recruiting people into this idea that we can win the battle for truth, because truth is much easier to sell than a lie. Keep that in mind as you're doing your work. Chris, I want to thank you for coming on the French Connection today. It was a really just off-the-hook interview. I know you got some other interviews coming up. Rick Adams tonight, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, and I dare say you'll never get as good a job as the three of us will do. In fact, the last time we were together as a little round table, people said it was the best work they'd ever heard. I hope we've surpassed even that last one today. This is an ongoing story. Eric, I want to thank you as well. You know, As always, the work we do here is very important, and you always do the best you can. I appreciate your help, my friend.
Oh, that's great. And, yeah, hopefully people can help Christopher Bolin. And I don't need the donations, but Bolin and the French Connection can always use them. So.
Well, I could use them to offset things here on your side of the ledger over there, Eric. You know, we do have small expenses. We're not a big organization, and anything that you can help us with. And if you are well fixed in this world, Walter, where are you? I've lost your phone number. help us get back on the beam here. We could use it. But until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Thanks a lot. Be well. Bye-bye.